there's been a few times where I'm like, man, I've got enough clients. I could go. Right. But at the same time, there is that kind of that security that not just I need, but that my family needs. You know, it's not just about me specifically. If I jump ship, then my wife is going to have anxiety because it's something brand new. And eventually, like, it could get to that point and it's just something you have to do. And you have to get through that anxiety and just kind of push through it.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Hustle to Freedom podcast. And always, I try to bring you guys awesome guests that are either actively building a side hustle that is generating money, or they have turned that side hustle into their full-time job. And today, our guest is one of the former. He is actively building a side hustle, which seems to be pretty cool, to be honest. I didn't dive into it super deep, but on a surface level, it looks really cool. And I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of it probably several times during this, but we'll dive into exactly what that is, why it's so hard to pronounce, how cool it is, how it's generating him money as a side hustle, and what you guys can take away with that. So with that said, Rich, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Ryan. Happy to be here.
Awesome, dude. So give us a little insight into yourself. Like, how did you get into this whole world of wanting to do something outside of your day job that generates money, aka create a side hustle?
Yeah. So it started, gosh, I think a few years ago. I worked for a bunch of different companies that essentially I just became just a regular run of the mill employee. You know, I was in management, you know, just kind of hopping from job to job, and eventually hit a wall to where, you know, I was like, I don't want to be, you know, just going from job to job and, you know, company to company. So I didn't have a college degree, and I found out through some friends of a something called a coding school that essentially you can go to, and it's kind of one of these new career paths that you go, and it's a boot camp of, like, you know, 4 to 6 months, kind of depending upon whichever one you go to. And they teach you essentially how to be a software engineer within, you know, just a few months. And at first I thought, you know, he went off, he actually moved from Seattle to New York, and he's got his master's in, like, English, and he had a solid career himself. So I was like, this doesn't make a lot of sense for him to do this. And he moved, and I just kind of kept my eye on him. And within 3 months he graduated, and I was like, there's no way that you could possibly do anything within 3 months. Right. And so a week after that, he gets hired by Inc. magazine. And so I was like, that's actually kind of interesting. So I picked his brain a bit, and he sold me on going to a coding school. And eventually I, you know, decided that that's kind of what I wanted to do. You know, I started playing around with code a bit, and, you know, to kind of fast forward after school, I got a job as like straight out of the school, actually within about 2 weeks, at a company that specializes in Google Analytics consulting for some pretty large brands like Tesla and Nordstrom, you know, GoPro, Fox, Cleveland Cavaliers, like, you know, Major League Soccer. And there was a bunch of things that I learned with that company that I was kind of able to carry over into, like, a consulting business. And I just thought it was interesting because analytics is, and, like, big data are kind of like these hot words that you hear right now. And as I started doing my research, I realized that nobody knows how to do this. Like, you know, there's tons of marketing agencies out there that offer analytics on the side, but it's actually, I mean, it's, once I got in there and saw, it was just surprising as far as how many, weren't doing it correctly, you know, and it starts with the data collection side via, like, you know, engineering and like web development and things like that. And so, you know, I saw an opportunity to be able to offer that same kind of, I guess, service to, small businesses, small, medium sized businesses that, the enterprise level clients are doing. And, you know, so after I stopped working at Analytics Pros, I went over to, Lululemon, and I'm a, software, engineer with them. And I specialize, I'm one of the lead A/B testing engineers. And so we kind of create A/B versions of the website and personalization, versions of the website as well. And so, the last year and a half, I've been doing that. And then I started the side hustle about a little over a year ago.
Nice, man. There's a lot of stuff to dive in to on that. But first thing I want to touch on is like the coding school and that path, right? Because I think a lot of people think that it's like some sorcery or some wizardry to learn how to code. I mean, that's what my wife does for a living. She's a software developer. And one of our past guests, Brandon Stiles, I don't remember what episode he was on, but he was in the marketing world. He had a local events business and things like that. And I think he went to a coding school as well, because I mean, in less than a year, he went from having these businesses. And then when I reached back out to him again, he had just got offered a job being a developer, a front-end developer, I think it was, for some company. And I was like, all that happened in a year? Like, how such a drastic change? And that's kind of what you described as well, is you can get into these boot camps and you can learn a totally foreign skill set, and it sounds like get proficient in it relatively quickly.
Yeah. So I think that the difference between like colleges, for instance, and coding schools specifically, is that coding schools kind of give you the foundational knowledge you need to be able to know how to be dangerous with it, right? Like just enough to be able to go in and get the job done. They teach you how to work. They teach you how to do what's needed to actually do what a company wants. Not all code schools are equal. You know, I think a lot of people, a lot of engineers saw this opportunity to be able to have an opportunity to create a side hustle, right? I think that when they started these schools, like, there was a few that had been very successful, and not all lasted, and so there's been about four or five just within the last few months that have actually closed. So being selective on it is definitely something you want to do. You want to do your research when you go to select one. But yeah, I mean, I think
how much did it cost?
It was about 15 grand. So okay. Yeah. So, and some of them actually offer that you can go to school, learn how to code, and then once you're done, or you don't have to actually pay anything until you're done and you get a job, and then they take a percentage of your earnings from then. So it's kind of a cool way. Yeah. Yeah.
So another thing that I wanted to pick up on what you told us in that beginning part of your journey is how you saw, as you kind of got into this space and you were working, you saw this opportunity in the niche, right? You saw that there was marketing agencies that were doing the data analytics, but it was like a side thing. And you were like, why can't I focus on this? Why can't I be the one who brings this to like medium-sized businesses, small businesses? So that's how you like identified your niche that you were going to go into. Like, how did that, was that investigative? Like, did you intentionally do that? Did you stumble upon it? Like, how did you determine, like, this is what I'm going to focus on? Because I think this is a very important step very early on in the process of like, okay, what can I do? How can I do it? How can I be different in the side hustle or the business that I want to create? So can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. So my whole thought process behind it was, everybody knows like kind of, what goes on online, right? Like, websites are collecting data, they're trying to better understand the user behavior. And as I was working for, my former company, I looked at it and I was like, if these large scale companies like Starbucks and Fox, if they don't even know how to accurately collect data, like how can a small business, mama's little bakery down the street, possibly know how to actually collect data, like, let alone like they barely know how to put up a website on Wix, So it's like, this is some pretty complex stuff, and finding a way to bring that from that enterprise level down to the small to medium sized business level, it takes effort, because you're not only installing and implementing, you have to teach the businesses as well. And so
you also have to educate them on the problem itself. Like, I could imagine that a small, medium-sized business might not even understand that the service you're offering is a problem that they have.
Right. Yes, exactly. So I ran into the challenge the first few months of some of these businesses actually thought that I was a marketing agency, right? Like they're like, so when are you going to put my Facebook ads up? And I'm like, that's no, I don't put Facebook ads up. Right. Like, you know, so there's definitely an education piece. And I think that's probably been the biggest challenge so far, is just like kind of getting them to understand A, the value of data, to kind of understand their user, to understand like, you know, how like just designing your ads all the way through, the user journey through your website, you know, going through the funnel and the whole checkout process, you know, those are all tested on enterprise level applications. And, you know, having data to fully understand what your user is doing, where they're coming from, how they're getting to your site, what they're doing once they're there, and then, you know, pivoting if needed, is definitely the hardest part to kind of that education piece.
How has that evolved? Like how, as you've gone through, because a lot of people, when they start out, what I see is somebody will start a business and they'll think they understand the problem and how they need to convey their message. And that'll be like the hill that they die on. They're like, this is how it needs to be said. This is how I need to convey my message. And people aren't receiving that message, but they never change it and to allow themselves to start getting more customers and things like that. But it sounds like you've kind of, as you've learned more about your potential clients, these small, medium-sized businesses, you kind of altered how you position your message and what you're offering them. Is that indeed true? Or did I interpret that correctly, that you've kind of evolved your message as you learn more about your customers?
No, 100%. So actually, just the term small and medium-sized businesses, it's like that itself, I've kind of learned that I shouldn't necessarily stick to just small and medium-sized businesses, right? Like this is something within the last few months that I'm like, why stop there? You know, why stop at small to medium-sized businesses? Like, yes, like offering the service to them is great. But like if Starbucks was to come and approach me and say, hey, can you do our analytics? Am I going to say no? You know, like, I don't think so, you know? And so it's something that like just that itself, just kind of the vision of who I'm going to help has evolved. But like to kind of, you know, answer the question of like, how do I do that? And how do I recognize it, I guess, is like essentially is what you're asking. Like I kind of have, in what I do, like there's the method of A/B testing. And for those that don't know, like A/B testing is, you know, having two different versions of something, right? In web development, it's two different versions of a website. So two users could come to the site and they could have, you know, version A of the site where, you know, it's got certain text on the site, it's got different call to actions. Usually it's small little changes, you know, and it's like a headline is different or there's a different image, you know, and then version B, a user comes to the site and then it's something completely separate. And then what they do is, you know, it's by separate, I mean, like, you know, it's a different image or text or something like that. And what you do is when the users, you know, come to the site, they engage with those changes. You then look at which one essentially led to, you know, whatever metric that you're trying to look at, you know, if it's revenue or something like that, you see which one led to a boost in revenue or engagement or something. So I kind of take that same model and apply it to just how I'm kind of feeling out these different areas. I don't go 100% all in on one direction. I tend to look at these different ideas and strategies, and then I'll implement them slowly and methodically and just kind of let them play out for a few weeks to a few months, depending upon kind of what it is, to see how it organically grows. And I think that the method there enables you to kind of be agile enough to be able to move to something else if it doesn't necessarily work. And so, and then fully implement it if it does work. And so I've kind of taken that whole same mindset of A/B testing and applied it to that.
Nice. That's awesome. Appreciate you sharing that with us. So you kind of got up and running and you've identified who your market is. That's still evolving. You're A/B testing how you position your message out to those people. I'm curious on those first couple of clients or customers, however you refer to them. how did that happen? How did you, okay, you got this idea for this service that you want to offer people. You think it'd be a great value. You understand that there's going to be a uphill battle on the education of the value of your service. How, like, what did it look like getting those first few clients? Like, how'd you go about that?
Yeah. So it started off with just the kind of my circle of people that I knew, you know, people within my personal connections, essentially. They were just kind of keeping an eye on what I was, my whole path and my whole just kind of change when I went through the coding school. And a lot of them would come up and say like, hey, you know, I'm proud of you for going through these changes and for sticking with all of these changes. And, you know, I think that the change inspired a lot of people. And so some people, you know, took notice. And then the ones that were essentially business owners that would then come and start to ask me questions. You know, all of a sudden when you have a skill set that people need, they kind of start seeking you out, right? And so it just kind of organically happened within the circles that I had. And then that was enough to be able to say like, okay, I have enough people coming to me that maybe I should actually start doing something here. And then once I started with their businesses, then I was able to kind of branch out and start focusing on other marketing channels like, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn. And so reaching out on Facebook, you know, there was different methods that I did there. Since it's such a niche field and I haven't spent really a ton of money on advertising, but I've been able to go onto, you know, different Facebook groups and just offer suggestions and, you know, just offered like a quick background, like, hey, you know, this is what I do. And people have jumped on that just because they're so hungry to learn it and they're so hungry to understand, you know, but it is so complex that it's like you take a look at Google Analytics documentation and usually within the first page or so, like your average person's out, you know, they're like, okay, well, there's HTML and stuff in there. So I'm out, man. Like, so they, yep. They kind of, you know, so
that's me. Yeah. So one of the things, so for those of you listening, if you ever want to be a guest on the podcast and you have a side hustle and you're making some money, there's a link you can go to. It's gritandhustle.co/guest. And on there, I asked for, you know, a couple questions that could help stoke the fire as far as the conversation goes. And one of those you mentioned that, you know, struggles with, and maybe struggles is the right or wrong word, I'll let you tell me, with anxiety and OCD. Now, when I think of somebody that might have challenges with those two, going out and doing things like, you know, prospecting in these Facebook groups, getting on the calls with people, like putting yourself out there as far as like starting a business and trying to convince people that you can offer value, I imagine that would be quite a challenge. True or false?
True. Yeah, especially at the beginning, man, it was really hard to overcome that, you know. And I think that just in general, you know, actually OCD, being diagnosed with OCD, like clinically diagnosed with OCD, was
what this is pure curiosity. And I'm just curious, as it relates to you, what does that mean?
OCD? So, yeah. So OCD it's not your average, like, you know, I have to have your crayons all facing the same direction. You know, it's OCD is something that is, you are essentially, you have the inability to let things go, certain thoughts, right? So like when something comes in your mind, you know, you're driving down the highway and you have that image of like you're just driving and you have an image of a semi coming over into the lane and like, you know, you get in an accident. Your average person can be like, oh, that would suck, and then move on. Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas someone with OCD, like they kind of ingest that and then they ruminate on it for 6 to 8 hours a day. My whole life, I wasn't like that. Through kind of my whole career changes and, you know, it's just some of the struggles I dealt with before going to coding school actually caused that to manifest. And so, you know, jumping through from job to job and just chronic stress actually is what brought that to fruition. And so, you know, I thought, you know, I was kind of for lack of a better word, going insane because I all of a sudden wasn't able to let these ideas go. And so, you know, I went to a few therapists, and they said that, you have OCD. And so it was good to know what it was, you know, and I was kind of shocked to know that OCD isn't just your regular, you know, it's not, you have to have everything clean and stuff. That's actually how that's how you deal with the thoughts, right? Like you're trying to find something to do to replace those. And so it was,
I could imagine that and maybe we'll get into this. Can that, because one of my questions is, so, you know, how did you deal with that because I'm sure it's much more common than maybe I would think out there in the world. So were you able to like turn that into something positive to help you? Because I don't know anything about it, but I imagine if you're harping on a thought, right? What, in as you described a negative thought, can you harp on a positive thought? Does it work like that?
Yeah. So it doesn't quite work like that, unfortunately. So OCD is an extreme form of anxiety. So, you don't get anxious about a positive thought, right? I think you can, but like, it's not something that, usually it's the anxiety of whatever it was that kind of gets you in this, in this cycle, right? And so that said, it teaches you to overcome a lot of different challenges and to be able to look for different ways to solve problems and be like, it kind of, you come out on the other side of OCD and anxiety of just understanding that like, yeah, just things are going to be okay, man. That's it. Right. And so, So I would say it doesn't really let you harp on something positive, but it teaches you how to focus on overcoming challenges.
How did you, because I think especially with all the stuff going on right now in the world with like people's routines being so vastly altered right now and people being stuck inside, a lot of people alone for like months at a time now, I could imagine that a byproduct of a lot of this stuff is going to be anxiety, OCD, a lot of these things. And a lot of people don't share that they have these challenges, right? These are internal battles that people are fighting. So I think it's worth chatting about as it relates to starting a side hustle a little bit more. So can you describe to us, like, how did you not let this, because I could imagine somebody with OCD level of anxiety, they might have this desire and this great idea of this, marketing analytics company, and it just stay forever an idea because they can't get past that anxiety of what would happen if I'm sitting in front of somebody trying to, pitch this service to them and they turn me down, right? And they just harp on that, like getting turned down, and they never actually take action on the idea. So like, walk us through how you overcame this and actually started taking some action.
Yeah. Great. That's great. I think one of the things that I thought was interesting about when I first found out I had OCD, I decided to look who else has OCD, right? You have a picture of Einstein in the background, and he was actually someone that had OCD, and so it doesn't have anything to do with it. Like for me, it helped to know it didn't have anything to do with intelligence. It was just something that just people deal with. I read a stat that if you collected everybody with clinically diagnosed OCD, which obviously there's more out there because you have to be diagnosed with it. So people are running around out there that don't know that they have it. If you take everyone that's clinically diagnosed with OCD, you can fill the entire state of New York with those people.
Oh, wow.
And so there's a lot. And there's even more people with anxiety, right? Anxiety is just a natural occurrence. And something that I started realizing is that like anxiety is something we're supposed to have. Anxiety is like meant to keep us alive. It's kind of that like primal feeling that like there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, in today's society, like we don't have lions chasing us. We don't have, we don't have like these different things that we need anxiety to keep us alive. And so, but if we still have that, we still have anxiety. And so just like knowing that anxiety is natural, and not letting it be a hindrance. And so like, if I'm going to pitch somebody, if I'm going to talk to, a potential client or something like that, just knowing that the worst thing I can do is let anxiety win, and just understanding that anxiety itself, like, it gets worse if you do let it win, you know? And so just pushing through it is actually the best way to deal with it. Because once you get on the other side of whatever you just did, you eventually learn that, like, you know what? I'm still alive. Like, I'm still me. I'm still a likable person, you know? And so it's just like, it kind of takes a little bit of effort to get through. And there was a few times where I was kind of frozen, but you just learned that, you know, maybe that person that's sitting across you on the other side of the table has anxiety worse than you do. You know, we're all mm-hmm. in this together. So it's just kind of it's a mindset shift as far as that goes.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I know, a lot of people will probably get a lot of value from, you know, understanding that if they're having these thoughts or these feelings, then, you know, it is still possible to kind of move forward and create that business or that side hustle, whatever it is that they're desiring. So when you started to get this thing off the ground and you started to actually realize, oh, like there's some possibility here. How did you, do you have a family?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. Wife and two daughters.
Yeah. So how did you begin to manage all of this? Like, so you've got a family that you have to, you know, be a part of, right? You have to be the dad. And then you have this job, and then you're starting to try to create this business on the side. How did you manage all of that?
Still a work in progress. It's definitely that, honestly, that's probably the biggest challenge right now. You know, I really try to be present with the girls. I try to be there for my wife, you know? And so, honestly, it's setting out a schedule every day of like specific times that I'm going to be working on, you know, my current company, Lululemon, as well as, you know, working with my clients and working with my family. And sometimes, you know, schedules aren't going to work, you know, as I'm sure most parents out there know that, you know, you'll hear a fight going on downstairs and you just want to make sure that they're both alive. So you have to get up and run down and understand that, you know, those things are just going to happen. And I think that, you know, the biggest challenge is making sure that your work doesn't slide at your current company and that you're still bringing value yep. to that current company. Right.
I talk about this a lot. I tell people that if you're starting a side hustle, that you can't neglect the thing that's putting food on the table right now. You should still be trying to excel at that, because, like, I don't know the percentages, but I mean, just the reality you have to face is that a lot of side hustles will probably never generate any income, or it'll be a small amount of income. Not to say that that'll be mine or yours or anybody's listening, but that is a reality of the situation. So to neglect your day job, which is actively giving you money right now, is kind of crazy, in my opinion. And I think a lot of people might fall into that trap where they're like, they have this like euphoria of like building a business and being an entrepreneur and stuff like that, that they just kind of like, screw this, I'm going to jump ship, right? They hear these podcast interviews about people, you know, getting an idea and quitting their job and making millions. And I'm like, did it happen? Probably, but are they the 0.001% that tried that and it worked?
Right.
Probably as well. so I think that's awesome that you know, you're mentioning that, right? That you're still focusing on the task at hand, right? This job, this one that's providing for your family right now.
Yeah, yeah, and that's it's something that you'll or me personally that I've kind of had a hard time with, like, you know, to your point, like there's been a few times where I'm like, man, I've got enough clients. I could go. Right. But at the same time, there is that kind of that security that not just I need, but that my family needs, you know. It's not just about me specifically. If I jump ship, then my wife is going to have anxiety because it's something brand new. And eventually, like, you know, it could get to that point, and it's just something you have to do. And you have to get through that anxiety and just kind of push through it.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get exactly where you're coming from, because I know, like, when I was starting the business, and so I worked, we had our agency for right around 8 or 9 months before I ended up quitting my day job. And at that point, I was making more money in the agency or about equivalent somewhere, I can't remember exactly, as I was making my day job. And it got to a point where, and maybe you'll get to this point at some point as well, where it was kind of like, it had to be one or the other, because there's only so many hours in the day, right? You can either give up some of the security, right? Quote, air quote, security, right? With the day job and dive into this new venture, or you can give up on the dream and stick with the day job. So I think, you know, that is a good problem that most people hope they have to encounter one day. And that's kind of where I eventually got to, where it was like, man, there's just not enough damn hours in the day to do both of these things. And I just personally, I was like, man, like I don't know if I'll be able to like live with myself if I just don't pursue the possibility of like I'll always wonder like, wonder what would have happened if that business, like if I would have gave it more time, like would it have been big or would it have failed? Like either way, like I'd still like to know what would have happened. Right. So that's kind of the point that I got to personally.
Yeah. And that's probably something that, you know, most people that have that success in kind of growing their side hustle that have to deal with, you know, it's like, okay, what do I do now? Like which one do I go all in on, you know? And so yeah. I'm getting there, you know, and it's to the point where I don't fully, like it's hard now because, you know, trying to fully getting in to a company and then having your day job and then trying to continue to focus on that and then focusing on your own company it's a challenge. And I think that right now, you know, having, like to your point, enough hours in the day is probably the hardest thing. Yeah.
So if we were kind of looking at a year ahead from now, where do you envision this thing being or like, where would you like it to be 1 year from now?
Yeah. So if we were to envision like a year from now, it would be, you know, a small team. We were actually, you know, I was getting ready to look at, some office spaces, before COVID hit, and now that's kind of out the window. And so I think it's probably smart to kind of like just wait until all this passes to kind of, you know, get into something like that. But we've hired, you know, a small handful of people now, that we have, working for us. And then, you know, just obviously growing that team. And I think my biggest goal is to create a workplace environment that doesn't cause, anxiety and OCD and things like that. And I think that like, that's obviously this utopian thing that may never happen, you know, 'cause you're always going to have like anxiety at work, you know, but trying to eliminate as much of that as possible, just because I know what it's like to go through that. And so, you know, creating a business that's going to be based off of that success is based off of, you know, how hard you try and how hard you work, as opposed to, you know, your performance or numbers or something like that. And I think that if you create an environment like that, people are going to want to perform, you know, they're going to want to try to do, you know, the best they possibly can. And so just having this culture of, you know, just wanting to be there, wanting to go to work, wanting to help each other, having this family kind of culture. And obviously that's a startup culture, you know, but, you know, I would be perfectly happy if I had a startup culture for, you know, the rest of the business life, you know, 'cause I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Now, to kind of wrap this thing up, are there any like resources, like whether it be like podcasts, books, anything like that, that you consume that have kind of helped you in like the process of building your business?
Yeah. So Tony Robbins, obviously, is great. You know, his insights and just things that he has done and shares and, you know, everything.
I saw the other day, I saw some clip of him where he said he owns 42 companies that generate $6 billion a year in revenue.
Yeah,
it's no nuts. Idea.
It's nuts. Yeah, he's got, you know, 42 side hustles. Like, it's like insane. Yeah. but anyways, so yeah, he's great. I think The Art of Manliness is another podcast I listen to. Obviously, your podcast is great. And then as far as books, I've been actually just recently reading The Emotionally Intelligent Leader, and it just kind of teaches you how to be emotionally intelligent and actually use the emotional side of your brain for leading and not just the analytical side. As I'm in data analytics, you know, and thinking like a software engineer, it's very logical. And so I need to get in touch with the emotional side as well.
Yeah, I imagine the emotional side is very important when you get into like A/B testing and stuff of like websites, because it's like human psychology, right? Like how do people interact with content and the elements on the site? And there's actually a website. I'll share it with you if I can remember later. I was seeing if I saved it maybe in my favorites. But it was a website where they kind of go into all the different, very, very odd, probably one of the coolest websites I've ever seen. They go into all the kind of psychological triggers that people have, like in how they navigate UI, UX, and all that kind of stuff. Right. I'll try to find it and share it with you. It was pretty awesome. I think it was called, actually, let me just search it in the growth. I think it was growth.design. Yeah, growth.design. That's the website. And if you go to growth.design/psychology, then you'll see the page that I'm talking about. I'll send it over to you. It's a super cool website. And I imagine that would, like, that emotional side of things is very important for what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the amount of research, you know, that goes into the user to create these personas. I think there's something about, there's like 28 different personas that have been identified for users on sites, you know, but just having like, there's UX researchers that go into the psychology of design. There's, you know, optimization specialists. And, you know, I was actually just reading the other day that like Facebook itself, like when Facebook was first launched, when Facebook was getting ready to launch their IPO back in 2007, the investors came and they said that you need to increase your engagement, you know, because obviously Facebook's revenue is built off of ads. It's like 97% or 98% revenue off of ads, which is insane. But
which is why all that stuff with iOS 14 is like all the news right now.
Oh yeah. And so their investor said you need to increase engagement. So their target was 85 engagements per day. So like, you know, a user comes to Facebook 85 times a day, which is a lot. Like if you think about it. And so 2007 is also when the Apple iPhone was rolled out. And so if you think about, okay, when the iPhone was rolled out, that's when applications or apps became popular on the phone. And so users had it right at their own fingertips. And so they created the app, and they still, engagement wasn't high enough. It wasn't up to 85 times a day. So they did some research and they created something called the like button. And they found that the like button actually is what caused, you know, that dopamine hit and that the want to see more. And so, you know, through user research and through psychology and all that kind of stuff, they were able to identify and really hijack like a part in our brain that is like, that wants that, you know? And so, yeah it's there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. And I think a lot of people, it's, you know, a lot of people get nervous and scared, and you know, there's a lot of stuff out there that's really, that is kind of, you know, it is scary as far as like, you know, data privacy. And, you know, I think that there's like GDPR is something in Europe that's happening right now, and CCPA in California, which is the California Consumer Privacy Act. And so there's going to be some pretty big changes here coming within the next few years.
Yeah. If anybody's interested, the site that I mentioned again, it's growth.design/psychology. I'll try to remember to put that in the show notes as well. Probably one of the coolest websites I've ever been on. Super cool. If you guys want to check that out, if that kind of stuff interests you on like why websites are kind of built the way they are, and even apps and stuff as well, like what are like the psychological principles that guide something as simple as like website design. So cool, guys. So, Rich, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the show and giving me, at the time of speaking, this 45 minutes and 5 seconds of your Saturday morning. It's been awesome to chat with you, and appreciate you, you know, sharing a little bit about your struggles with OCD and anxiety and kind of shedding some light on that, because I think it's super important with all the stuff that kind of people are going through right now. So appreciate that and sharing about your journey and your company. And I don't remember if we actually said the name of it. I know I said it was hard to pronounce. So can you share a little bit more about your where people can learn about the side hustle?
Yeah. So the name of the company is Rux Analytics, and it's spelled R-H-U-X. So Ryan, at the beginning, you were talking about being hard to say. I get R-Hux, I get R-H-U-X, I get, you know, all sorts of different pronunciations for it. So you know what? As long as you're talking about it, that's all I'm happy about. So, you know, so to check out more, you can actually go to ruxanalytics.com and check out our website there and just kind of ask some questions. And, you know, if you have any other questions, just feel free to reach out and be happy to answer them.
Awesome, Rich. Well, thanks again so much for coming on the show. And if you're interested in anything, the websites we mentioned, the his site, anything like that, just check the show notes down below. And I'll catch everyone on the next episode. Talk soon, Rich.
Yep. Thanks, Ryan.
And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcast and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.